Hello and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, hosted by a couple of gals who have had a very busy week, I would say.
Extreme.
Anyways, we are your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. We have had a very busy week and, you know, I've learned a lot of new things in the last couple of weeks, honestly. I've been traveling a lot to rando places. This week was Des Moines, Iowa. Have you ever been to Des Moines?
No, I haven't. Should I?
Des Moines has it going on. Like, now I kind of want to go back and have a girls' weekend or something in Des Moines. I mean, we lucked out and had amazing food, stayed in an amazing hotel, and of course, Sextero has some amazing clients there. So we got to meet with some great clients as well. But I mean, we had fun with them and we had fun just existing in Des Moines. I learned a lot. Number one, it never ceases to amaze me how every region and every city prides themselves on certain food. Texans are always saying, you know, like, we have the best brisket or we have the best Mexican food.
Which is, in fact, true. You do have the best brisket in Texas.
Of course we do.
Yeah, obviously.
Duh. But in Des Moines, I was like, what do you have the best corn? Which, yeah, I mean, actually, yeah, they do. They're corn experts there. But they also have
like this their whole identity.
Yes, they have this whole pizza thing going on. Apparently, the best pizza that you could buy is in a convenience store. I'm hearing all of this. And in the back of my little foodie brain, I'm judging hardcore. Like, people don't know what good food is.
Y'all been eating too much corn.
But then I ended up eating taco pizza, which had refried beans instead of pizza sauce, which I thought was amazing. And then I had a breakfast pizza, which had something called a cheese gravy on it. Thank you very much. Ooh. And it was freaking delicious. If I ever lived in Des Moines, I would never be able to leave because I wouldn't be able to fit on the plane. It was so good. Anybody that you met, the Lyft driver, the people in the hotel, the people in restaurants, the people at our client's office, everybody's talking about pizza at a gas station. That's the best thing. Make sure you get it. So that's one thing that I learned. Another thing is they have the state fair there. And
I've heard of this.
Yeah, well, I apparently live under a freaking rock.
It's like a political boondoggle.
Oh, is it? I don't know about the politics.
Oh, but yeah. Iowa State Fair is like a whole thing.
Oh, well, I did learn that. And by the way, everything I learned was from a Lyft driver for the most part about the state fair. So I will not be able to verify truth, but I'm pretty sure this is right. But he was saying that the Iowa State Fair is the third largest state fair in the United States. And I was like, really? I would never have thought that. And apparently Texas Livestock Show or Houston's Livestock Show and Rodeo is number two. And then Minneapolis is at number one. Yeah. It's like some huge state fair. Like, now I need to go to it.
Do you have favorite fair food?
I do. I like deep fried Oreos a lot.
Oh my God, that was going to be my answer.
Of course it was. We're the same food brain.
We're the same person in a lot of ways.
I know. I feel sorry for you.
Deep fried Oreos. I feel happy for you. I feel happy for me too. I feel happy for all of us. Deep fried Oreos are amazing.
What else have you had that you like?
Deep fried peanut butter and jelly.
I haven't had that.
Really good.
I would love it because I do like peanut butter and jelly.
Deep fried Snickers.
Ooh.
Also delicious. I mean, I feel like you could deep fry pretty much anything and I would eat it. But can I tell you this one time? So we went to like the Wisconsin State Fair. My whole family's from Wisconsin. And a bunch of Sconnies. And so we went to the state fair with my parents and we were going straight from the fair, like to get on the plane home. And my mom got fish on a stick at the fair. And
wait,
then
fish on a stick? I've never heard of such a thing.
Is this a Wisconsin thing?
It's definitely not
a Washington thing. I've never seen it.
It's not
in Washington.
A Texas thing. We put beef and poultry on a stick.
Must be, we're a beef people in Texas. This must be a Wisconsin thing. They are a fish people. Wisconsin people are fish people. So it's literally like fried fish on a stick. and you just like walk around and eat it. But so my mom took it with, this is like just such a classic boomer move. She didn't finish the whole thing. So she put it in like a plastic, like a Ziploc, put it in her purse and took it to the airport. And then we're sitting at a bar and she fucking pulls out this fish out of her purse and was like, well, I figured I'd eat half of it now and then half of it on the plane. And I was like, Mom, you cannot bring fish on a plane.
Oh,
like there
God.
Are there are a few things that are absolute no-nos on a plane. You can't attack the pilots and you can't eat fish. It's right. Just horrendous. Right?
Oh,
and
so my gosh.
She was like, you're bullying me. I was like, I'm not. I am trying to spare the other humans that are trapped in metal tube in the sky.
I mean, how long was this thing at room temperature? Like,
too long.
Is that a concern for your mom?
Too
I think baby boomers have stomachs of steel, though. My parents have eaten some things that could have killed them, and I don't understand why they lived through it. Because
oh my god, I know
I wouldn't be able to do it. But
right,
yeah.
Okay, when I was pregnant, I was too sick to eat basically anything. But the one thing I wanted consistently my entire pregnancy was shrimp cocktail.
That is so weird.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I want a single saltine cracker, which I will then throw up. And then I would like my shrimp cocktail, please.
Oh my God. So does your daughter like shrimp cocktail today?
She likes everything.
So she's an adventurous eater.
This bitch really likes.
This love of my life, bitch.
2.5-year-old daughter. Her favorite nut in the whole world, pine nuts.
Oh,
I'm like,
of course.
Girl, first of all, that's sort of fucked up. Like, they're a garnish. And secondly, they are so expensive, which is why they are a garnish and not snacking nut.
Where did she have pine nuts to begin with?
Okay, so sometimes we take a muffin tin and just like put random shit from the fridge in it. And so one time I was just like, ah, crap, like I'm out of whatever nut was her favorite nut that week. I was like, all right, I'll just throw some pine nuts in here, whatever. Of course, she's like, more pine nut. And I'm like, I'm going to go broke buying you pine nuts.
Well, don't put caviar or pate in there.
She loves them both.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't buy her actual caviar, to be clear. I bought her like salmon roe, which is a Seattle. And as a Seattle man, like salmon roe are everywhere, right? You can't walk down the street and get hit by salmon roe.
Well, anyway. If her and my son ever get together, they're going to be trouble because he's Mr. I only want the proper preparation of Caesar salad dressing with the crushed anchovies and the finest olive oil, please. If you could make that from home for me every day to put on my lunch, that would be amazing. Like, what the fuck? Have you heard of Hidden Valley, dude? Like, what?
Us, when we were kids, it was like, here's some cheese whiz on a Triscuit.
I know.
Go nuts.
You know what's so funny about that, too, is I was just watching, I was catching up on TV shows I missed last week. And I'm a big MasterChef fan, of course. They did like Food of the Generations. And for my generation, for Gen X, they were like cheese puffs, cheese whiz. We had the worst generation. Pasteurized cheese in a can, meat in a can.
And all of ours, millennials, all of our food was neon when we were kids.
That's true. It was.
Like, neon, that could not have been
millennials
healthy.
Are the next worst box for the record.
Apparently, Gen Alpha is going to have the best food because these little fuckers are eating caviar and hand-smashed anchovies.
And pine nuts, please.
And pine nuts.
I only want them roasted. Oh, my God. Yeah, I guess we need to like grow up and get on with the show here, Angie.
get on with the show. Yes.
Okay, you're right. Yeah, we are here to talk about e-discovery. We decided that we'd like to talk about being shady because that's one of our favorite topics. What we are talking about today is not deleting your text. What we really are going to drill down on is the implications of your text messages and why it's important that before you do purge any text messages or communications that you consider your legal implications. We're also going to talk about how we preserve text messages and data on mobile devices and different forensic procedures and different software that might be utilized in that process? And also, what about data retention policies? They have something to do with all of this. So that is our topic of conversation for today.
So just to level set, today we are talking just like SMS messages on your phones. We're going to tackle some tricky data sources in a later episode, things like WhatsApp and Signal. And so I think maybe let's start off talking like legal implications.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the most important things, I think, probably to think about. And we're not just talking about text messages, by the way. This could be photos. This could be call history. There's all kinds of information that's found on your mobile device above and beyond your text messages. This data could be potential evidence. If we're in a corporation and we have some sort of lawsuit or investigation going on, all of the information found on someone's mobile device could be responsive to that matter. Some examples of that could include things like, hey, maybe we had somebody being fraudulent or they had some sort of misconduct within the corporation. There's like insider trading going on. They're stealing people from us. They're stealing ideas from us. That sort of activity can totally be unraveled on a mobile device. I've personally been involved with those investigations myself. So
stop committing fraud, Brie, and you won't be involved.
I know. Well, I wasn't the perpetrator. I was the investigator.
Not the frauder.
Exactly. But then you also have contract disputes. The conversations that happen around a specific contract or even the versions of a contract, or even, have you ever done this? Hey, can you just take a picture of the signature page and send it to me and we'll just add it on and call it a signed agreement?
Yes.
That's evidence right there. And then, of course, we have employment issues. Coworker versus coworker, employee versus boss, managers versus executives. We even have people on the board that are arguing with each other. We even have people that are employees who are doing terrible things with people outside of the company. So there's all kinds of employment issues that are certainly unraveled within a phone conversation or text or even GIFs and emojis and that sort of thing. Because when this involves litigation or an investigation, we're really looking for relationships, intent. If someone said something off color, how was it really meant? What would that look like? Or how would that come across in the conversation where it was said or texted? A good idea when we have data on our phone that's potentially relevant is to preserve it. I mean, that's what that legal hold process is all about. As soon as we have that litigation or we have that HR dispute or we have a reason to even believe that there's wrongdoing going on, then we want to lock that data down, preferably with the legal hold process, so that the person who owns that device is aware and the company is taking action to make sure the data is being preserved. And I guess we have to turn to our lawyer to tell us why it's important to preserve that data.
Yeah. Okay. So there are a couple of reasons. Just at a baseline, the federal rules of civil procedure say that we have to. And your local state rules probably say something similar. What the FRCPs say, that's the federal rules of civil procedure, FRCPs, is that parties who and reasonably anticipate litigation, and then like through litigation, must preserve their electronically stored information, or ESI. And that ESI includes text messages and things on your phone. But then also, like on a more practical level, there are kind of three main reasons to preserve your texts. Number one, you really want to avoid spoliation sanctions. So spoliation is the intentional or negligent destruction or alteration of relevant evidence. And the consequences for spoliating evidence can be severe. The courts can impose fines, they can dismiss claims, or they can instruct juries to view evidence in a certain way, usually not to the deleting party's benefit. So that's number one. Number two, you really want to maintain your credibility and you don't want to be looking shady in front of a court or a jury. By preserving that ESI, by not deleting your text, it ensures to some extent the integrity and the credibility of your evidence. To that end, you know, the court will then is more likely to view you favorably if you're not doing a bunch of shady shit on the side and then coming into court. Courts don't like it when parties try to circumvent the rules that way. So that's number two, maintaining your credibility. And then number three, kind of what Bree touched on before, is you really want to ensure that you have comprehensive evidence. Texts can provide really critical context and details that other forms of communication might miss. I mean, if you think about it, I speak very differently over text than I do in an email. You know, my text could supplement what I'm saying in an email or shed some light on a particular term, but basically it's just more context. They can also help corroborate or contradict evidence from your emails and documents and things like that. So, you know, Bree's example of you take a picture of your signature and tell somebody to just put it on a contract. If you get into a dispute about that contract later, you know, that text helps support the ratification of that contract. It can corroborate other things in that way too.
So I kind of touched on this a second ago in terms of legal holds, because I love to talk about legal holds so much. When we do send out a legal hold notice, we want to be very specific with employees what they are saving. And we also need to be respectful of the fact that this could be emotionally jarring to them, because think about it. Think about all the embarrassing things that you might look up on your phone about toenail fungus or, you know, your kid's ailment that they're dealing with today. But we want to be very specific when we're asking our employees for relevant data that's potentially on their mobile device. And also remind your employees that you're not just talking about text messages, that you might be talking about files that they have on their phone or photos or any email that they've retained on their phone. So remind them of all the different areas on their device which could potentially be relevant. And then you also want to have already thought ahead about how are we going to go about preserving them? Is there a reason why we need to confiscate this phone and just put it on lockdown and not let anybody touch it? Could be. I mean, depending on what the matter is, or It might be just sufficient enough to have your employee collect their text messages and have them either imaged somehow or have them collected in a forensic manner off that phone. That might be okay too. So just kind of depending on the scope of what is relevant for that legal hold, I would just say be specific, be understanding, be available to work with your employees on this, and have already thought about the different potential situations that you might be dealing with and have a resolution. Because nothing's worse than getting an employee in a very highly emotional state where they're uncomfortable and they're nervous. And then you yourself are also nervous and uncomfortable because you don't know how to resolve the issue of how do we capture what we need to capture from your device. Outside of the legal hold notification process itself, there's other best practices for organizations and individuals to comply with the preservation requirements when it comes to data on mobile devices. One is implementing a text message retention policy. And remember that a retention policy in-house refers to a set of guidelines and procedures established by an organization to manage the creation, maintenance, and disposal of its records and data. The whole objective of a retention policy is to make sure that we're keeping all the important stuff and that we're required to keep, maybe for regulatory reasons or for business requirements, but then we're getting rid of all the other things that we don't need any longer because we don't want to have to be responsible for going back to look through that data for responsive material. We also don't want to incriminate ourselves if that's the case with any of that data. So
if you do a crime, just delete your data. You'll be fine.
Oh my God. You don't take her. This is not legal advice. I just want to tell you this is the opinions and expressed on the e-discovery checks. I'm just kidding. But that's really important to think about, you know, maintaining your retention policy. Make sure that your employees know what that is. You have a way of executing your retention policy, et cetera. And if there are business documents and records on someone's phone or mobile device, that you have a way of preserving them the way that they're required to by legal and regulatory authorities. Because that's something that happens way too often. And because it's just easy. It's easy to text each other images and what have you that are actually a business document. Like, let's make sure we're saving that in a way that makes sense. The other thing that I will say in terms of policies is a bring your own device policy, which I believe we're going to talk about a little bit more later on in this discussion, that it's important that people understand if I have my own device with me, what is my right to hold on to my own data versus what is the company's right to come and retrieve data from my device? kind of laying out expectations, I think, is a really good thing, because data on a phone can be a really touchy subject. I know you had some great real world examples, Angie, that maybe would be a good time to share those.
You know, I love my case law. Okay, so do you remember during the pandemic, everyone wanted to get their hands on an N95 mask for a while? And there was this shortage of them. And then, okay. So this case relates to that issue. It's called Two Canoes LLC, the Adyen Inc. It's from April of this year out of New Jersey. And I thought this one was super interesting because it's where a case about deleted texts resulting in sanctions. And it also ties into trial strategy. And so I really wanted to kind of bring this full circle about we're talking about this in the abstract, but it can have these really far-reaching effects. It's like a butterfly effect. You know, you delete a text and suddenly your trial strategy is all fucked. So the parties are Two Canoes and Adyen. Two Canoes is one of those companies where it's really hard to explain what exactly it is that they do, because everything on their website is just like, we help businesses thrive and innovate. Adyen is a small family-owned company and they provide logistics services. So Two Canoes claims that Adyen sold them a bunch of fraudulent N95 masks. Like, they weren't actually N95s. They were something else. And so at a certain point, July 2021, Adyen is on notice of this lawsuit. And so from that time forward, they needed to preserve their messages. They needed to preserve their ESI, which, spoiler alert, they didn't really do. Adyen's principal is this guy named Adam. So I'm going to call him Adam from here on out. He has a last name, but since he did some shady shit, I'm going to call him by his first name. All right. So Adam produces a bunch of ESI from various sources, but he leaves out his messages from WeChat. If you're not familiar with it, WeChat is this popular sort of ephemeral messaging app from China that allows messages to disappear from the WeChat servers, but it will still live on that person's phone. So WeChat doesn't hang on to it, but that person will have it on their phone, which is an important factor here. Adam testifies during a deposition. He's like, yes, I did talk to people about these N95 masks on WeChat, but he's like, I lost my phone. I don't have those texts anymore. Another important thing coming up right here. Adam is like, not only do I not have this phone, but I've gotten at least 3 cell phones in the last year and a half. And one phone in particular is one that he got rid of after he was supposed to be preserving all of his shit. So we've got this loss of data, basically. This comes up on a motion. The court is asked to sanction Adyen, the company, because Adam deleted all of these texts, basically. So the court decides, they're like, yes, this evidence is lost, but those texts could have shed light on the main question in the case. And the main question was whether Adam, aka Adyen, this company, whether he knew that those masks were fraudulent. That evidence might have been in those WeChat messages that he deleted. And so let's talk about how this affects trial strategy, because the court basically says, listen, I don't have enough evidence right now to do anything about this, but what we're going to do is we're going to take this to trial and we're going to let the jury decide, did Adam intentionally delete these texts? Would these texts have been bad for Adyen? And then the jury's going to decide if any sanctions are appropriate. So he basically tables the question of sanctions. This would fuck with your trial strategy, and let me explain why. Preparing for trial is hard. It is arduous. It is complicated. And there are a million and one contingencies, all of which you need to be prepared for. One thing you do not want to be dealing with is your main witness's credibility. You're going to do that sort of to some extent as standard practice, but you don't want your main witness's credibility and the potential liability of this case to be the linchpin of your defense. But that's kind of what the court has done here. It's basically made it so that their trial preparation must be focused in large part on Adam's credibility, Mr. Three Phones Adam. And that shifts your whole preparation. And not only that, if your trial presentation goes poorly, if Adam doesn't come off as likable, the jury doesn't buy his story, you're looking at a number of potential sanctions. All of that to say, messages are a super important part of e-discovery, and you need to be aware of the different types of data that are stored on people's devices. That could be text, could be WeChat, could be another messaging platform. But as part of that legal hold process, when you're going around trying to preserve all of the relevant ESI, you gotta know what data is out there. And here, one other thing I want to highlight about this is that there's a ton of motions practice that led up to this trial. And Two Canoes and Addian don't have an answer to this yet. Like, this only happened in April of this year. But one thing I did want to highlight is the cost of litigating that spoliation component was probably astronomical. Litigating those things, filing a motion, arguing that motion, that is not cheap. You're looking at $50,000, probably at a minimum, to defend something like that. The cost of preserving those messages would have been a drop in the bucket, probably, compared to that. So that was just another thing I wanted to highlight.
It kind of brings up to me the change management in an organization. I didn't talk about that earlier when I was talking about policies, but that's really one that we sometimes, I know I forgot until it bit me in the booty, because I didn't realize, like, oh yeah, if I tell somebody to preserve their device and then the IT help desk says, hey, Mr. Whoever or Mrs. Whoever, it's time for you to get a new device. Well, that employee and that IT personnel should be asking themselves the question, is it on legal hold? Because if it's on legal hold and you guys purge it and go on with a new device, then you lost, you spoilated, you spoiler, that the data on the original phone. So in terms of a legal hold process, I think that a questionnaire is a really good idea. And I always had as a consistent question, when did you receive your mobile device and have you had any mobile device upgrades in the last however many months or year or whatever? And that way you can iron out whether or not you're dealing with somebody's phone that they've had for the entire time of that litigation or what's relevant to the investigation or not. And the other thing is that you want to have some sort of way of knowing when that change management policy is going to ding your employees for a new device and make sure that the proper IT personnel and whomever is involved is following legal hold procedures. One way that I have found personally that is a great way to do this is to have some automation with your change management platform to be able to flag when a device is on legal hold. That way, when your IT personnel goes in there to say, hey, Angie's due for a new iPhone, they can see that she's actually also on legal hold. So they need to make the legal department aware.
I feel like this touches on something that we have talked about a couple times before, which is you have to work cross-functionally with other orgs.
Oh, yeah.
You should be friends with your IT team, your engineering team, you know, because those folks are going to help you turn this, all this legal shit from theory into practice.
Exactly. I mean, the worst thing, actually, it's the second worst thing you can do. The worst thing you can do is not have any policies at all. Like, that's just living crazy. On the wild side. But the second worst thing you can do is have great policies, but nobody follows them, because then it looks like you're a bunch of liars. And every organization struggles with that, because sometimes the people who are making the policies aren't talking to the people that actually have to implement them. And that's a huge problem. We mentioned this earlier, the bring your own device policy. And within it, you can mention things like legal hold, data retention, change management. All the things that we've mentioned can also be referenced in your bring your own device policy. So bring your own device, which a lot of times is the acronym that's used is BYOD, refers to a policy where employees are allowed to or encouraged to use their personal devices, such as smartphones, tablets, and laptops, for work-related activities. Companies implement BYOD because of a couple of different reasons. Number one, it's cheaper for them, generally, than buying everyone a device and maintaining it. It's also more convenient for employees. I'm one of these employees that does not like to have two phones. Some people do. Some people like it because it's like a good way to divide work life and home life.
They don't both fit in my pocket.
No, and I would lose one. What do you walk around with a phone in each hand? It's like double fisting. Like, I can't do that.
There are things I will double fist, and phones are not one of them. I have my, like, I will triple fist beverages. Right now I've got my coffee, my water, and my like sparkling peach tea situation.
Not
double fisting phones.
And I want to have everything at my fingertips. How many times do we have to look at our calendars? Let me look at my personal one. Let me look at my work one. Let me look at my kids one. Like, there's so many calendars we have going on. And so it helps with productivity in that way as well. What are the risks associated with BYOD? And I'm talking specifically about data preservation and legal compliance. Number one, our personal devices are vulnerable. I mean, you know the crazy shit that you load on your phone. People aren't always thinking with a corporate mindset when they're downloading different applications on their phones, making them more vulnerable than maybe like a network computer would be. And speaking of networks, what about unsecured networks? Employees are using their phones in all different kinds of places. And then you've got the malware and phishing risks that are there. People are checking all kinds of crazy mail on different sites and everything else that are not as secure as our company networks are.
So some other challenges that you might face. So these are just data preservation challenges in general. First of all, you might get inconsistent data retention. Personal devices might not follow the same data retention policies as company-owned ones, and so that can create gaps. For example, like if your work data, you know, you keep that for 7 years or whatever, but your phone is set to delete your text every 30 days, which is a very common thing on iPhones, you might get some gaps there. And so you need to be mindful of that when you're issuing your legal hold and drafting your BYOD policy. Relatedly, you might get accidental data deletion. You know, those text message retention things, that's a big deal because most people don't retain all texts for all time. And so you might get some gaps there as well that you need to be mindful of. And if someone has, as part of your legal hold and your BYOD policy, you know, you might need to dictate to your employees that they suspend that auto deletion while they're on hold or, you know, for whatever other reason.
Angie, we've talked a lot about policies, procedures, and why it's important to preserve your data. Let's talk about actually getting it. So when we get data from a mobile device, it can be really, really tricky. And it very much entails somebody that has some forensic expertise. When we say forensics in relation to mobile devices, what we're talking about is either collecting, preserving, analyzing, and or presenting digital evidence in a legally accepted manner, or sometimes we say in a defensible way. When we have a forensic expert, which by the way, can be someone within the company itself, can be an in-house person, there can be a forensics group, it could be somebody within your data security group, it could be somebody in legal ops or e-discovery who might have certifications in computer forensics. Or you might be hiring a third party. You might be hiring a private forensic examiner to perform this. And I would say when you are making the decision to collect data or preserve data on a device, start asking yourself some questions. What does this matter really involve? How long is this matter going to be going on? How likely is it that we are going to trial? How important is it that I have someone who could be a trial witness as to how we processed the data on this device? How deep do we need to get here? It may be that just having a screenshot of a couple of text messages is suitable for whatever the matter is that you're dealing with. It could also be that you need to have somebody who's tried and true in trial and can get on a witness stand and prove the very bare bones of the data and the retention of that data on the device, how it was done, and can attest to it. So I would say pause and make your mind up which direction you want to take at this point. Also consider if your forensic expert is in-house, whether or not it's appropriate that person takes the stand if they need to. So just words of advice there. You also want to make sure that your forensic person is familiar with chain of custody management, because that's something an investigator will be very key in maintaining for you. When did we get the device? What was our initial assessment of it? Is the phone broken? Is it, what version is it? What brand is it? Who's had it? Where is it going next? What is the chain of custody? Then you're going to want an image of that phone, most likely, if that's your method of preservation. And you want to make sure that's a forensic copy, an exact image of that device, which would include the how the sausage is made of the phone, where you're going to get those fragments of the pictures that somebody tried to purge, or the messages that somebody tried to cover up sending. You're going to ask yourself some questions about logical recovery versus physical recovery. when we are talking about logical, we might be looking for something that's like a user, what we think of like as a user file. What are the text messages? What are the phone calls? What are the files that somebody's downloaded recently? Physical recovery does get all of those usage analytics and statistics from a phone. Know that you can do things like reconstructing messages, reconstructing purged items. It's much like preserving the image of a PC where you can find those fragments and remnants or linked files or shell bags on a PC can also be found on a mobile device. You're going to need someone who has forensic tools and forensic expertise to do that for you. You can also do a deep analysis of metadata. There's reporting that a lot of times different software that's used to pull the information from a mobile device will put together reports for you that will have things like timestamps. When was a message sent to and from, and what was the phone number and who was the sender? What was the content of the message? What was the GIF? What was the photo? What was the image that was used? All of those different pieces of information are being recovered from that forensic software and placed into a report. You're going to need somebody who's qualified to interpret that report and to be able to explain it to your legal team and possibly to a jury or another party in a dispute. When we talk about forensic software, there's several different options on the market, and I would say this is another place to hit pause. What do I need? Do I need all the guts of my phone and all the user reporting and when's my phone been plugged in and where are all those fragments of data?
Or my photos of dead bodies?
Or do I just need to know like what Angie's texting about and what, you know, what picture she has? Those are two totally different requests. And so they may require two totally different tools. Another thing that you want to ask yourself is, am I getting cooperation when it comes to collecting this data? Because if you're collecting from a friendly person, that's your employee that's cooperating with their legal hold, maybe you can use some software that's on the market today that they cooperate with you, they log on, and they set it up for collecting just that relevant data. But maybe you don't have cooperation from the user and you have a terminated employee that threw a phone at you on their way out the door and password protected it, and you have no idea what that password is. That is a totally different methodology. of trying to get to that data. You're going to need tools that can help you crack through a PIN or password or help you with other alternatives to getting that data. So just some things to think about. I've already mentioned some of the technical challenges that come about as you're thinking about how do we get at the data on these devices. One that I just alluded to was that password, by the way, and that's a technical obstacle. If we don't have the password or the PIN to get in, we got a problem. If we have encrypted messages or overwritten data or damaged devices, that's another problem. All right, these are all things to go to an expert with to get help. Are there any other challenges you can think of, Angie?
One of the big ones is just getting people to care, you know, especially in a BYOD situation where you're trying to get employees who might not really feel like they have any skin in the game to do something that they find minorly annoying, which is to change the retention policy on their phones. One thing I wanted to flag here is, why should it matter to you? Why should you care? And apart from just not wanting to be a turd in the punch bowl, when it comes to litigating, you don't want to be the employee whose loss of data ends up negatively affecting the company. And then by extension, your livelihood. I just wanted to flag that. This isn't just for corporations. This isn't just for people sitting in their ivory towers. This is for the people who are texting on their phones and have data that could be relevant.
Yeah, I feel like I've learned a lot of lessons the hard way when it comes to mobile devices. I can think of three groups of people that it's super important are on the same page with legal. One is management. If you manage employees, you need to be aware, number one, if your employee is doing something sus with their phone, like, I don't know, recording your conversation, and that's against your BYOD policy or something, that's probably something to report to legal. We want to make sure that it's not going to get everybody, including you, into hot water. Also, if you're a manager, how to properly handle a termination. There could be a process, and in my world, there should be a process for handing over that device when you are on legal hold and you're terminated. Mm-hmm. There should be a chain of custody form completed, and on it should be your PIN number or password so that your phone is accessible by the company. And that's important that a manager knows this, because that manager might be the last person to talk to that employee on their way out the door. You know who else might be the last person to talk to that employee is HR. So HR is another group of people, I would say, super important for them to be on the same page about what we do with devices. What happens if you have to go bust up some crazy shenanigans and confiscate everybody's phones? How do you record that? How do you fill out your chain of custody? Who do you notify? What happens next? All good conversations to have with HR. And then with IT, hey, willy-nilly people, don't just wipe data. You need to be doing some checks. Ask some questions first. Where did this come from? Is it appropriate for me to trash this phone? We need IT to work with us as well.
Okay, that's all we had slated today. So I think that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We are now on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. We are like fully syndicated machines. So pretty much wherever you get your podcasts, you'll be able to find us. So please follow, give us a 5-star review, tell all your friends, family, and coworkers about us.
That's right. And don't forget, if you want to come catch us live at Techno Security, we will be there next month. So
yes, we will.
Speaking about forensics and mobile devices, that's a great place to learn a whole lot more about the subject. But then you can also come listen to us talk about internal investigations, too.
Yes, it's going to be so much fun. And so that brings me to my next point. Please follow us on LinkedIn, and you can check us out at ediscoverychicks.com, where you can find a discount code to the Techno Security Conference, as well as more information about where and when it is. So until next time.
Bye.
Bye.